Time to talk about money with Shane Oliver from AMP, Chief Economist. Good morning to you once again, sir.
Hope you're well.
I hope you are well too. Shane, we'll have a look at the markets. What they did yesterday was extraordinary. They went up. We'll talk about that and why. But I want to give you a dilemma. An email from a listener. You ready for this?
Sure am.
Okay. So this listener has just inherited a substantial amount of money, about $700,000, and wants to know what's the best thing to do with it. Now, this listener is saying, I'd love to get rid of my mortgage, which is at $300,000. But then obviously, we're going to have some money left over. I have advice from a respected friend who says, I'm mad if I don't buy an investment property. But I don't want an investment property. I just want to get out of debt. I'd like to have some comfort buffer money. I'd like to go on a holiday and I'd like to do some renovations to my home. What do you reckon Shane would say? What would his advice be? How do I spend this inheritance? Should I put some on my super, for example? Anyway, Shane, what are your thoughts?
Well, of course, I have to preface this. This is general advice. I don't know the circumstances of the person who wrote the email. But look, there's a bunch of things to consider here. Obviously, super is something you'd look at first, along with the mortgage. The reason I say look at super is we all know the government in recent years has imposed a cap on super. So if you're not at the cap, which I think is about 1.9 million, so it's quite possible the listener isn't on the cap. So you could put some money into super. The reason you would do that is because the earnings on super, if, as an investment, are taxed at a far lower rate than anything else you can do.
Right.
So that's why you would do that. Oftentimes, the rate of earnings is taxed at 15% rather than your top marginal tax rate. Now, that quote me precisely, and that'll depend how much you got in super and what your earnings were, but much lower tax rate. Alternatively, if the email writer, the person who sent the email in, is already maxed out, they can't put any more in, unlikely, not many Australians are, they could put it into their partner's, their spouse's super. And I think you can contribute something like up to $110,000 into your spouse's super. So that's one way, another way to go. But I think, you know, particularly when you get later in life, it does make sense to pay down the mortgage.
Yeah.
It does provide comfort going into retirement. Mm. Yes, you could sort of leave the mortgage there and use some of the money and put it towards, you know, a unit on the coast somewhere and generate a bit of income. But if you don't really like debt, person doesn't like debt, then you may not feel comfortable doing that. Mm. So, and this is particularly the case as you're getting closer to retirement. So, you know, there may be a case, just pay down the debt, do whatever you want to do to your house so it's in good shape for the time when you do come
for
into
sale,
retirement.
Yeah.
And then enjoy yourself. You don't have to be out there making more money. If you think you've already got enough going into retirement, you don't have to be going down the path of negative gearing and all the complications and the risks that potentially entails. You don't have to do that if you've already got enough. So there's a bunch of options there. I'd first look at super,
yeah,
then the mortgage, and certainly having a bit of fun and doing some renovations.
So what if you bought shares, which is really what your super's supposed to be doing for you, isn't it? Depending on who you're with and how they're managing your money. What if you put some money, a good whack of that money, into just the bank and have it earn you some interest?
Well, you could do either of those things. And shares are not a bad way to go because they'll pay you some dividend income, which, you know, in most cases, if you buy a good quality Australian shares and you add in the franking credits, you can get up to, say, 5%, 5.5% cash flow on that investment, which is pretty much the same as you get in the bank. But the only thing is you get upside. You'll get upside if the shares go up. Of course, you also get volatility if they go down. So there is that option. And odds are, if the person's only got a $300,000 mortgage and you use your $700,000 to pay down that, you've still got a chunk left over. Even if you spend some on renovations, odds are you'll still have a chunk left over. So you've got to put it somewhere. If it was me, I'd be comfortable with shares, but I know a lot of people don't like the volatility that comes with that. But I like the fact if you put your money into a well-diversified mix of Aussie shares, you will get good dividends, and the franking credits will make sure you get a cash flow roughly the same as what you get out of the bank.
Is putting money on shares a bit like putting money on a favourite at Randwick on race two?
No, no. Well, that is, of course, someone might say, well, you know, Shane, you know, you work for an investment company. Of course, you'd say it's different. The reason I say it's different is that when you put your money in the share market, providing you choose good, sensible companies that are providing services for Australians, then those companies will earn, make money on those on that work they do, whether it's a Woolworths or a bank or what have you. You can see what they're actually doing and how they make their money. Whereas when you're putting it on, you know, a horse at Randwick.
Well, or Bitcoin.
Or Bitcoin. It's a bit of a gamble. You don't quite know where it's going to come from. It may do well. And you might say, well, based on the past form, it'll do okay. But you don't quite know. Whereas at least with a bank, a supermarket, and a bunch of things, airline, that you know what they're doing, at least you've got some confidence there that it does have some underlying fundamental value and generate returns over time.
Shane Oliver is with us, Chief Economist with AMP. The markets went up yesterday.
They certainly did, Luke. It was a good day for the ASX. It rose 82 points, up 1.1%, getting us back above the 76,000 level, 7,649. Still well down from the high, which was the end of March. We got to almost 7,900. And it was all about what's going on in the Middle East. So you may recall last week, the Aussie share market fell almost 3% last week. On Friday, we came down at 1%, and that was on the back of the counter-retaliation by Israel against Iran. Since then, nothing much extra has happened, and so markets have relaxed a little bit, and so we've seen the Aussie share market rebound. Now, of course, this could flare up again, so you don't quite know, and I suspect we have to get used to a bit of volatility for a while yet. Interestingly, yesterday, all sectors went up. The biggest mover was BHP, biggest contributor of the gain. It was up 1.8%, higher iron ore prices.
That's where, that's where he should put his shares, BHP.
Well, that's one way to go. It's funny, my mother, my dad actually bought BHP shares in the mining boom of the late 1960s.
No.
He did, way back then.
What were they? What were they then?
A couple of cents. It wasn't much. And we always used to joke about them through the 70s. It didn't do so well for a while there. I think it was called the Poseidon nickel boom. He didn't buy Poseidon.
Poseidon. But
BHP. And now my mum's still got them. Good on her. They've done fantastically well.
Good on her.
So BHP, it was the biggest contributor yesterday. The only sector which went down was energy. And the reason there was because the oil price fell back after things settled down a little bit in the Middle East. But as I said, things could still blow up again in the Middle East, bit of volatility there. But at least we did have a good day yesterday. And that also saw the Aussie dollar creep up a bit higher above the 64 cent level, but still pretty much in the dog box, but not as badly as it was.
Where's the Australian dollar?
Well, it's 64.28 or there at 64.30. About that. So a bit better, but not nothing to get too excited about. It's still going to cost you a fortune to go on an overseas holiday.
Yeah, won't be doing that for a little while. God, airfares have gone up, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Unfortunately, they're still a whack above where they were pre-pandemic. Unfortunately, I think the airlines are going to say, "Well, we still don't have the capacity we used to have." But I also read somewhere that there's still less people flying than there was pre-pandemic, particularly domestically.
And interesting, Australian tourism has fallen substantially as well. We are a long, long way to come, especially from Europe, and it makes it an expensive holiday. But that's another story for another day. Shane Oliver, good to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke. Have a good one.
Chief Economist with AMP and our finance expert here on The Night Shift, Shane Oliver.